You're listening to a recording of a live radio show on NPR News. If you want to listen to us in real time, you can stream our show live weekdays at 9 and 11 a.m. Central. Thanks for listening and enjoy the show.
Good morning, I'm Carrie Miller. This is NPR News, and we're talking politics this hour as we do on Mondays. The political junkie is here. I'm going to be asking him about the question we're going to consider this hour. As America sinks ever deeper into polarized quicksand, have we arrived anew at the need for a third party? Now, I don't have to tell you that third parties have had a rough go of it. Ask Teddy Roosevelt and his Bull Moosers. Ask Ralph Nader and his Green Party. And Ross Perot and his Reform Party. Of course, Minnesota elected a third-party governor in Jesse Ventura. Remember this?
Now it's 1998, and the American dream lives on in Minnesota as we shock the world!
So that tells us that political history isn't always political destiny. As our guests join us and as Ken joins us, I'd like to help create a third party mission statement. So think about this. Take the best ideas from Democrats and Republicans and mash them up with some fresh, innovative ideas. What would that third party stand for? That's what I'd like you to think about as we go to the political junkie, 651-227-6000, 800-242-2828, and on Twitter at CarrieMPR. Ken Rudin is with us. Ken, welcome. It's good to have you on the show.
Thank you, Carrie. Good morning.
What do you think when you hear talk of third parties? Because I know you're a political historian and you've seen interest in them come and go. Are we in a moment when this makes sense again?
Well, I remember the Teddy Roosevelt campaign in 1912,
and I
just started collecting buttons that year. But you know something? I've been thinking about third parties for a long, long time. Of course, I do remember the George Wallace campaign in '68, and then of course it was John Anderson, and it was Ross Perot, and while we always think of Ralph Nader only got 1.7% or 1.9% of the vote in Florida, but that was enough to deny Al Gore theoretically.
That's right.
The presidency. So these third party candidates usually hurt others and don't really necessarily help themselves. But when I think of third parties, I don't think I think of any presidential election more than in 2016, when you had two flawed candidates, Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump, running for president. That should have been the year where there was a boom in third party of the protest votes. And yet, Gary Johnson, the Libertarian candidate, got 3% of the vote. Jill Stein got a little over 1% of the vote. And when you have people, when you have nominees so disliked and with such problems like Trump and Clinton, one would think that you'd get a larger anti-Democrat and Republican protest vote. But it never happens. I mean, I think Gary Johnson during the summer was polling anywhere between 13 and 15% of the vote. But once voters go to the voting booths, once again comes down to crunch time, they rarely pull those third-party levers.
You know, Ken, since you mentioned 2016, it occurred to me that Donald Trump's election in some ways could be seen as, you know, a certain amount of receptivity in America for a third party. And here's why I ask that. I mean, he ran as a Republican. He stood for a number of positions that weren't traditional Republican principles, although he also did stand for some conservative principles. But we know that he voted, you know, Democratic in some elections in New York. I mean, is he just that kind of candidate that if he thought he could win as an independent, he would have been taking ideas from both sides and been happy with that?
Oh, I'm convinced that had he lost the Republican nomination, he would have run as a third party candidate or an independent candidate. And you mentioned the fact that he has supported and voted for Democrats in the past, and that's true. And in 2000, remember, he was all but sure to run for the Reform Party nomination in 2000. At the last second, he backed off because he said it's a bunch of David Duke and Pat Buchanan candidates. But Roger Stone and Donald Trump were engineering a Trump run for president in 2000 as a third party candidate. So in many ways, you're right. He is not the archetypical Republican candidate. His views did take a lot from Democrats. And had he kept to that, those positions he had, he might have been seen as a transformational figure against the two parties than he is now. I mean, of course, the Republican Party is Donald Trump's party, but there was something about Trump, something, if you got rid of the nativist rhetoric and things like that, there was something like the heck with you, Democrats and Republicans.
Right, yeah.
I'm going to do it my way.
Right.
And it would have been interesting if he had followed through on that.
A call here for you, Ken, from Greg in St. Paul. Hi, Greg. How are you thinking about this?
Yeah. Hi, Carrie. I really respect Ken's opinion and yours, but I think to even start this conversation saying we have to have more third parties, that term alone makes it seem like there can only be three parties. I mean, most governments in the Western civilization, latest UK and Germany, have coalition governments. They might be a minority ruling, but we have to move away from even the term third party. Thanks. I'll hang up and listen.
Sure. Yeah. Greg, thanks for the call. Ken, I think Greg makes a fair point there. Maybe it's just that we're so accustomed to the idea that we are a two-party country that even the language has to change on this.
Well, maybe. I mean, I don't mean to be anti-semantic, but I mean, I think it's very possible that rather than say third parties, we can say minor parties or multiple parties. But we do say, I mean, it's interesting when we talk about third parties. In 1948, for example, when it was Truman versus Dewey, there was Henry Wallace, who ran on the left, and there was Strom Thurmond, who ran on the right. And they were both called third party candidates, even though by anybody's accounting of math, there were four candidates there. So I guess maybe the language could be changed to make minor parties. But I guess the goal, of course, is to not make them minor parties. You think of Ross Perot in 1992 and all the millions of dollars he spent. He spent a record $60 million, which was, at that time was an enormous amount of money.
Right.
And he got more votes than any third party independent candidate or minor party candidate in history with 19 million. But how many electoral votes did he get? Zero. So that's the dilemma that these other candidates have to deal with.
Chris says on Twitter, third party for me, small government, less on defense, socially live and let live, gun control, pro-environment. She kind of sounds like a libertarian. Maybe we are primarily talking about libertarians here.
Well, the libertarians don't. I mean, it's interesting. I mean, for example, if memory serves, Bob Barr, the former Georgia congressman who was the libertarian nominee or was a candidate back in, was it 2004, 2008 or something like that, he was anti-abortion. Now, if you think of libertarians, you think of, you know, keep government out of the bedroom.
Yes, yeah. That's
and
true.
So the Libertarian Party may have been compromised by its own libertarian beliefs. So not every libertarian candidate is the perfect libertarian carrier of these views.
Jeff says, I'd like to see a third party focus on post-secondary education, fast track to good jobs, 6-month programs, focus on Social Security and Medicare solutions, push for infrastructure changes that make sense, and make common sense cuts to military and social program spending. And I actually think Jeff has probably outlined a platform that a lot of Americans could get behind. Why is it that the parties are, and I think I know what the answer is going to be here, Ken, but are so invested on the extreme ends of their activists?
Well, you know, I was thinking of Jeff's list, and I was thinking, well, you know, also I would love free ice cream and candy. I really would, because that would make me very happy.
And so, but it shall happen for you, Mr. Rudin.
but that's exactly what's wrong with politics. I mean, the fact that what they fight over, and every time you talk about, look, when President Trump came to office, he said one of his priorities was, you know, working on infrastructure. To me, that is not a Democrat or Republican issue. It's common sense, because our bridges and roads are falling apart. And yet, the fact that, well, we can't do that because we're spending this and spending that, and there are ideological battles that both parties have to deal with, it's just, I mean, that's why everybody, so many people just give up on politics altogether, because they just, nothing gets done. And you know, it's, I don't think anything, I mean, everybody says, well, we can't do immigration reform or overhaul because of the elections that are coming up. There are all
how
these elections
many
coming
times,
up, but nothing
right.
gets done.
Ken, I saw an interesting statistic from the Pew Research Center on how many political bystanders there are. So there are Americans who are aware of what's going on in politics, but they don't participate. Nearly 20 million people, many of them young and of color, are not involved in the political process. And I wondered, are these potential voters ripe for inclusion in a third party? And many of them, as you know, don't trust government because they're young and they've grown up with a lot of information about what the government can't get done. Are they ripe for a third party, you think?
Theoretically, yes. But I mean, if you think of African-American inclusion in third parties, I don't think that John Anderson or Ralph Nader or Gary Johnson or Jill Stein focused on African-American voters. I mean, I think there's a mindset in this country, and I'm not critical of that, that it's Democrats versus Republicans. Maybe that's what's wrong with everything. Maybe that's why nothing gets done, although the thought of, you know, 25 parties fighting for the presidency or for Congress seems to be just, you know, making more of a mess than it already is. But I just think that it's somehow something horrific or something monumental has to change in this country before we start giving up on D's and R's. And if it hasn't happened so far, then I don't know when it would that could happen.
Okay, so Tane says on Twitter, most new parties in U.S. history have emerged from the dissolution of an established party. So would it take the breakup of one of the current major parties to create a viable third? And then he adds, also, please remind Ken that he owes me a button from getting his podcast trivia question right earlier this year. Ken, you owe him. Are you making a note of that?
Do you have to read all the negative stuff as well? That's true.
Ken, you are shortchanging Tane, and that cannot stand. Get a button out to him immediately.
That's true. Mr. Danger, I do owe him a campaign button. But you know something? I mean, that's absolutely true. And of course, the third-party candidates, of course, the Republican Party came into existence after the breakup of the Whig Party and things like that. I've heard people say that what Donald Trump is doing to the Republican Party, if it becomes disastrous and if it becomes a Trump-only party, I mean, the thought of all the traditional viewpoint that so many Republicans have given up in their quest for loyalty to Trump is just remarkable. But if the Republican Party does disintegrate or fall apart, I mean, there are Republicans who say that they're willing to come up with another third party or another party in the advent of the collapse of the Republican Party. But we always think that after Goldwater, we said, okay, the Republican Party is finished. A new party has to come up. Or after McGovern in 72, when he lost 49 out of 50 states, there needs to be a new centrist third party. It just never happens.
Ken, we're going to keep on talking about third parties, but I cannot let you go without talking about James Comey, the interview last night with ABC, some of the excerpts from the book that are getting out. And I thought this was especially interesting from the ABC interview. Comey was asked by George Stephanopoulos whether he thought the president should or would be impeached. And here's what he said.
Impeaching and removing Donald Trump from office would let the American people off the hook and have something happen indirectly that I believe they're duty-bound to do directly. People in this country need to stand up and go to the voting booth and vote their values.
What do you think when he says, let them off the hook? There's a subtext to that, isn't there?
Well, I think he's reminding voters that they made the terrible mistake, in his view, of electing Donald Trump in 2016. But, he, you know, it's something he's saying does make sense. First of all, I'm gonna give you a list, I'll read you a list of all the presidents who have been impeached and removed from office, and that is nobody. Mm. It's never happened. Nobody's ever been
because
impeached
even Nixon.
And removed from...
Oh, this is our Nixon mention because
oh,
even
God.
Nixon
Ken,
resigned.
You, Harry,
I had to.
Harry, you were so
I had
obsessed
to,
with
Ken.
Nixon. You're so obsessed with him.
But isn't
you're,
that true?
You're like Tame Danger in that button. Anyway, okay. But anyway, but he's right. I mean, look, if you want, look, the honest truth is you're not going to impeach a president with a Republican Congress. And even when the Democrats take over, there's no guarantee if they take over in 2018, there's no guarantee they'll get anything done. So I think the answer is elections, both in 2018 and 2020. But it was interesting, I think, first of all, the whole hour, I don't think I blinked the whole thing. Whenever it seemed like between Stormy Daniels and James Comey, I just found myself just like glued to the TV. I didn't want commercials to come. And for all the faults of James Comey, and there are so many, I mean, the fact that he has a blind eye for the political consequences of things he did.
Yeah.
The fact that, well, maybe I helped elect Donald Trump. I mean, but I think he makes a good point that the answer is not going to be impeachment. The answer is going to be voters going to the polls. And there's no guarantee there'll be an anti-Trump vote in 2020.
Ken, talk to you. Oh, not next Monday, the Monday after. Have a great vacation. We'll miss you.
Okay, thanks.
All right.
This was a recording of a live radio show on NPR News. To add your voice to our discussion, you can call in at 800-242-2828 or tweet Kerri at @KERRINPR. And if you miss us live, you'll find all of our shows by subscribing to this podcast. If you have questions, you can email us at talk@npr.org.